It's now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
Well, I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey. Well, I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Renee Lockie.
Renee, you're back. And where's Brad? My goodness.
Where is Brad?
Renee came out for a visit, and Brad and I were talking about how we're going to get together and do a podcast for the week when you do it. And this is actually Thanksgiving weekend, so hopefully...
Happy Thanksgiving.
People are having wonderful times with their families and being incredibly thankful. We always celebrate on Friday at my house because my daughter and kids end up with the in-laws on Thursday because they always do... This is their big family event of the year, so we never get them on Thursday, which is just as well. Lots of football on, so...
Yeah.
I get lost in the football, and then on Friday, I can get lost in the grandkids, so... It'll be all fun on Friday here.
And Friday's the day our family celebrates, too. We have an after-Thanksgiving potluck. We call it We're Thankful, and we just share what God's done and how he's blessed us. And so that's our big day.
Is that going to be in Austin?
That's going to be in Austin.
Okay.
Out at
your mom's coming down
Alyssa's ranch. Actually, mom's not coming. She's coming for Christmas. So it'll just be, just our extended church family.
So how are you on this journey? Are you finding yourself at this stage, thankfulness come easily, or is it a discipline of yours?
Thankfulness comes very easily these days. I think I wake with a lot of gratitude daily. No, not a discipline.
Yeah, for those who don't remember, Renee was on the podcast last spring, shared some of her journey out of homosexuality into a greater place of freedom. We had quite a bit of email from that. I think you did too. Some good conversations with people.
Wonderful.
Dealing with that in their own family.
Wonderful conversations, emails, some phone calls across the United States and beyond, and Africa, Australia, and a lot of people that just really touched them and their family and some friendships, and had a lot of questions to ask, and it was very fruitful.
Mostly about what? Learning how to love a child, friend, something that's dealing with this?
Learning how to walk that out in the discomforts and in the reality that we can't control one another on that journey. Finding peace when somebody's not willing to change, and finding the words to come alongside somebody and help them sort that out when they desire to change, even as hard as it is to break free.
Yeah. Did your mom hear it?
My mom did hear it, yes.
What'd she think? Just the way you talked about her love for you. I mean, she knew that already, but...
Yeah, I think she was very touched by it, and... yeah, I think so.
Well, for those that don't remember, Renee's an OBGYN in Austin, Texas, and you're out here to visit some folks?
Yeah, trying to pack in as many of my Orange County area friends as I can in just a few days. One specific friendship I'm hoping to rekindle after 15 years apart, and looking forward to that, and reconnected on Facebook with an old coach of mine. And
yeah, so someone that was real significant in your life when you were a professional racquetball player?
Right.
Seriously?
Right. Back in the 80s and early 90s, that was my sport. That was my identity for a long chunk of my life.
But you get the 15th in the world? Is that kind of about how you got?
Right about that.
15 in the world. That's a pretty good deal.
That was about as high as I got. And then it was time to move on to a real career.
So you're in med school and getting all that nailed down.
Right.
So how is it practicing medicine in Austin?
It's very good. It's very satisfying. I'm finding a lot more satisfaction in my work as I've just... kind of slowed down and relaxed into it, and see it as just an extension of kind of see it more as my ministry, and more of just what I was created to do. And I've just I'm finding a lot of joy in the ordinary parts of my job, as well as the really complicated and challenging ones.
Yeah, we talked last time about this vast number of people that kind of surround your life in Austin. I've been back to Austin since you were last here.
Right, in April.
Back, even though we're not in Orange County here, we're in Ventura County. You made quite a drive last night to get up here.
That's a little distance from Long Beach Airport, but totally worth it to see you and Sarah and the pups and Totally worth the drive. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. We're happy to have you and continue the friendship that we've begun. Like I said, I was back in Austin. We did some sharing on the cross with some folks that you know.
Right.
So you're dealing with a lot of things with yourself internally and that group in terms of how do we find fellowship? What do we do? You've checked into some house church thing. It must be part of where the conversation was last time. How's that bunch doing? How are they group doing, but just the bunch of folks. Are they
right?
I think
I think so. I think I feel like we've moved beyond seeing ourselves as a house church or even a simple church or organic church or whatever language we felt comfortable with, and just more like a spiritual family now. And I think we've relaxed into the fact that that is good and that is enough and that is okay, and perhaps that's even maybe God's best. But it took some undoing, and you were there for a real significant part of that journey, letting it be, coming together spontaneously as the Spirit leads and not feeling the need, to stick with a schedule or an agenda. And, I can't speak for the whole group, but I think many of us that have embraced that, are enjoying it more.
Well, some like more of a routine. We've got a meeting every week we can go to. I mean, you are getting some of that feedback.
Some do. And I think they're finding their meeting to go to somewhere
else.
I think those who feel like they need to have some structure are still kind of checking in to some traditional fellowships, or they're coming to the weekly. We do have a weekly Bible study time, and it's not extremely structured, and in the sense that there is no leader, and we don't prepare in advance. We don't have questions. We simply come and read a chapter or two or three or however far we get. And we allow it to be interrupted for, sharing our personal experiences and how it's applied. And so there's
still tied to exercise first. You've got to ride, run, do something.
Right. We call that Saturday gathering. We started it in January of 2010, and it was a year-long goal to read through the chronological Bible together and to be disciplined and exercise together on Saturday morning. So we would meet for a run at Town Lake, which you've enjoyed with us.
Or a walk when I was there.
Or a walk.
It was a walk.
And sometimes we've met for bike rides, and then we move over to the coffee house and just relax and get our Bibles out and spend an hour or two or three around the table just in the Word. And so we that's just been going, and it's and we're still enjoying it. So we keep coming together for that.
One of the things you mentioned earlier was that it makes it less visible, at least by name, as the fancy jib that used to call this thing. It's less visible to some people. So some people think it's died away, when you're saying, gosh, I think it's more healthy than it's ever been. Isn't that an interesting paradox?
Yeah, it really is. There's people, for those of you who don't know what Wayne's talking about, our home fellowship as it first started, we kind of gave it an organic name, centered around how we first came together, sitting in the kitchen, sharing a few beers and some ice cream. And so we named, our little meeting time, our group, Jib, for Jesus, Ice Cream, and Beer. And it just kind of stuck. And I think there's been some in the kind of extended, faith community, there've been people saying, so what's going on with Jib? Is it still around? Does it still exist?
Because it got to be a pretty hot place to hang out.
It got to be an attraction.
It got really large and overstuffed the homes you were in. And,
exactly. It grew from 9 people to 60, 70, 80 to where we really couldn't gather all together under a roof anymore. So we went through our attempt at a multiplication or division, or however you want to look at that, going back to some smaller fellowships, and several of those just sort of naturally died out, and one continues to thrive, but it doesn't really look so much like a house church anymore, where we have a set meeting and an agenda, but more it's like a family of people who are continuing to move together and come together pretty much as the Spirit prompts, most weekends and often in between, but with no set structure.
That's great.
Yeah, and so the rhythm feels right. It feels right to me.
That wasn't an easy adjustment.
Not at all. Not at all.
Because you've done the house church thing. You've been to some of the conferences. I mean, you've really looked at that as one of the options and we're not saying it's the wrong option. This is the only way to go, to be more spontaneous, less structured. I do think relationships eventually end up there. I think relationships find routine confining, but people who don't have relationships, they find routine very comforting. They find, I need a meeting. Otherwise, exactly. I won't make space in my life and I won't get to a certain location or I'll get left out of the invitations. But you guys have a pretty open little Twitter thing that lets people know if they want to come join us.
Yeah, we are pretty open. And but it has been that we've realized that the heart of it is the relationships and those connections. And we don't need to have a meeting to come together. We long to be together. And mm-hmm. so we don't need to have something to be obligated to or confined to. We're going to naturally come together because we have grown together and we enjoy each other's company. And it's really fun.
Some people would suggest that the meeting actually allowed that to happen. So maybe you're past the meeting and the meeting was an essential part of those.
I think for a season, the meeting was important. I think, I think until those relationships got a little bit deeper and until we sorted through what is this and what does it mean to be on this journey, to be the church, what is the church? And we were all in different stages of kind of hearing from God on that subject matter. So while we were sorting through that, having a set time to come together and even having a set focus, I think for a time was important. And it's morphed. And but I don't think there was, looking back, I don't really have regrets of the course that it took. I think it was necessary to walk that out. I mean, it was a long distance to come from the Sunday morning traditional mega church to the home fellowship, house church. Well, who's in charge and who's leading this to moving beyond to the all persons participating, spirit leading, living it out to just like a liquid church, like just a family that's church whenever we gather.
What I like about that part of your story, because people are constantly looking for a model, even if the spontaneous thing is the model, instead of, what is God asking us to do in given seasons? And like you say, the meeting served a purpose. It brought some people together. When I was with the group, just the honesty and openness, I saw some wonderful dynamics even in that kind of a gathering and the conversations that went on around it. So it's not like, well, we finally got to the thing God really wanted, but God invites us through different seasons, and there's fruit that comes out of as a regular meeting. There's people getting together that weren't getting together before. Relationships mm-hmm. are beginning to happen. And then maybe we outgrew the need for the meeting, but it doesn't mean the meeting was a bad thing or a wrong thing, or that God might not in the future just, there might be more of a once a month or whatever get together that's bigger. You might end up there. But so it's not, the object is not structure things as little as possible. It's just follow God on an adventure. And a meeting serves a purpose, then have a gathering. And when it doesn't serve a purpose, then fine, you don't need them because relationships have outgrown the need for it, which is wonderful.
Right. And there was a real need to sort that out together. I mean, there was a real hunger, almost kind of a desperation to come together often. And as we were in that stage of just, what's going on? I mean, it was disturbing. Like there was and we needed to come together and have that conversation. We needed each other's support. I think that we have to be careful not to judge the stages that people are in on their journey and not to say, yeah, that the meeting is wrong, because, I don't think there was anything intrinsically wrong about the fact that there was a meeting. I mean, we even had typed agendas at times for the meetings, and that just kind of helped us stay on task for what we felt like God was, calling us to talk about it together. And but it's nice to be past that.
And it was part of that process. We were on a houseboat on a lake near Austin somewhere, and there was a lot of people there talking about Jib and their hopes for Jib, and people weren't on the same page. It wasn't like everybody wanted the same thing. Everybody was looking for what is God doing and how do we be a part of it. And I think it's a wonderful conversation to have. It's a healthy dynamic. We're not on the same page, but we're talking, we're listening to each other. There's a lot of frustration in the meeting mm-hmm. by different people in different places. But I think that kind of conversation is incredibly helpful. And
yeah.
I watched you guys walk through that, at least from a distance. And I'm blessed by, we haven't seen each other since last April, I guess, when I was back out there. So it's good to hear where that group is kind of sorted out and some of the folks that were there. And I understand, I appreciate the people, because I know there's a lot of people who are never going to have the initiative to, maybe not never have, but at least at this point in their life, cannot invite people over or even facilitate a spontaneous gathering. And I think those people are the ones that really love a meeting. At least I've got something to go to and I can make a connection there. And that's a comfort for them. And it's not a bad thing, but it's scary for them to think of, well, if you don't have a meeting, I'm going to get left out. I'm not going to have enough initiative to find my way into relationships. And I guess part of me wants to say, I think the meeting time is valuable for them. I also would want to say to them, maybe it's time you learned that. Maybe that's part of your journey. God, how do I begin to initiate some of these? Because I've used this stat before, probably on this show, but I've used it with a lot of people. I think about 10% of people will initiate, you know, come over to dinner or let's have a barbecue or whatever. And about 90% of people, even if they really love those events, don't have maybe the security socially, maybe, I don't know what it is, just don't have what it takes to say, gee, let me invite some people over to my house this weekend and have that deal at my house. So to those folks, I think learning hospitality, learning to open your home and heart to others, even meeting at a restaurant if you don't want to invite them to your home, if that's too much work to get that ready, or a picnic in a park, there's lots of ways to help people be together. And I think that's where relationship grows. They grow by being together. And people who feel left out of relationships often don't know how to do that. So they're kind of dependent on people like you or others, me, that will plan events and invite people over. But I do think an important part of our journey, if you want to have relationships, it's something you risk and something you open the door to. And hopefully some of the folks will learn that too in this process.
And I think for those of us who do initiate, we have to get to that place when we're not feeling the need to initiate something, resting in the fact that those other people are okay, those ones that would only come with an invitation, not worrying about, well, what's going to happen to them if I don't plan the meeting this week. And also being willing to let some of those go, like some would fade away or fall away or find another group, and just being at peace with saying it's okay if they go for a while.
Because I think I first met you, you were carrying a lot of responsibility for a whole lot of
for
people.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you got a busy life anyway. I mean, you work a 20-hour week or something, right? Or 80 hours or something. Yeah.
20-hour day.
I'm kidding. So 20-hour day. Yeah,
sometimes.
That sounds like Brad's schedule now.
20-hour shift.
You're a busy life, and a lot of people want to know you, connect with you, really resonate with your story around Austin. And you've been helpful for people on similar journeys, finding freedom that needs to happen. So it's easy for people to want to make you responsible for them. And I think when I first met you, it's easy to be seduced into maybe I do have a responsibility.
Absolutely. I feel, you know, the need to fix and to solve and to carry and to do was really strong. And I think I was just kind of reflecting even just on the airplane trip here of where I've been growing on this journey. And I think just a lot of that is moving beyond those things, moving, you know, learning to rest and relax and carry only what God is calling me to carry, do only what he's calling me to do. And for that to be enough, and to trust God with all of the things that I was once feeling responsible for, or once carrying, to trust them to God, because I was exhausted, and that was what kind of moved so many of us out of the traditional church in the first place, was just exhaustion by all the things that they were asking us to do,
right,
needing us to do, and I was finding the same problem infiltrated the house church, or had the potential to, if I wasn't careful to only carry my life.
I like that tension between not feeling responsible for people,
but
willing to carry whoever God's asked me to carry.
Right.
So I can't pick up
everybody.
Which
is never everyone.
Yeah, I can't pick up everybody in this town that wants a connection, but I can pick up the 10, 12 people God's asking me to connect with. And that can even change over time. I mean, Sarah and I, we've lived here 2.5 years, and there's some people we've walked with for a season, then God's put other people in our heart, and now we're walking with them for a season.
Right.
And so I feel incredibly responsive to God about caring for the people God's asked me to care for, which is very different than feeling responsible for everybody in this area who wants to have a relational connection with me or with the body of Christ. Somehow I've got to organize something to make that happen. That's
right.
A very different motivation.
Yeah, and when we look at the life of Jesus and who he walked with and how he taught, I mean, there were times when he taught to large groups, but by and large, he spent a lot of time with his 12, and then he spent a little time with 2 or 3. And so you just kind of seeing we can only do so much. He only could do so much. So having realistic expectations about what's going to be accomplished or what what can be done within a group of, you know, 10 or 20, and then having only those handful of people that you walk really, really intimately with in a discipleship type role. Many of us have little triads that we walk with, whether they're connected to the larger fellowship or whether they're just, you know, two or three people in our life that we walk with, and making time for those regularly helps such that we're not coming into the group of 10 to 15 with all this expectation that that's going to meet the need, because we are walking intimately with a brother or sister real regularly.
Yeah, and it doesn't mean you become a closed life. I mean, watch your life. You're very open to people around you, very serving of folks, patients, other doctors in your practice, to people on your street. I mean, you live an open life. It's not that, oh, I'm just going to closet myself up with my three favorite friends.
Right.
I know people say, well, that's what it is, really. No, it isn't that. It's, man, I'm open to the next person God brings in my life. If I need to carry them for a little bit of the journey, I'll carry them. But that's very different than, I'm going to plan a meeting that's going to try and meet all these needs for this group of people I feel responsible for, and then find over the long haul the meeting doesn't do it. And what I found when I was back in the day of doing those things, that the people I would manage the meeting for weren't coming, and the people that were coming didn't need the meeting to manage it. And so it's kind of like, well, even what I'm doing it for is not here. And that kind of helped disabuse me of that notion. But one of the things, the reason I invited Renee to join me today, we got talking downstairs this morning about something I thought, man, a lot of people on the podcast would be thinking the same thing. And I think it ties in well here, because it's that when you're breaking free from having this responsibility for, and you mentioned this a little bit ago, but we talked about more downstairs, it's easy to compare yourself, particularly when you're coming out of a high-powered institution. Am I doing as much for Jesus now as I was doing then? And am I doing enough? And why don't you talk about some of that? Because some of the ways that you have been challenged, I think, in this journey.
Yeah, I realize that there's that underlying question that I don't speak it out very often, but I think that I feel is that wondering, am I doing enough in the various areas of my life? And there's that tension of that question. And I think that's it's not, for me personally, hasn't been such a struggle of, am I doing enough to win God's favor or his love, or, you know, it's not a religion thing, but it's a compare and contrast with the people around me, that you don't even realize is happening. I think it's just human nature. It's just, is this enough church? I mean, I remember the first time somebody told me they lived a life of kind of like a liquid style church, not even a house church, you included among them. I remember feeling very critical of that and just like, thinking, is that enough? And I didn't know what to do with that thought. And now I'm experiencing that myself, as it feels like it's enough, but I find myself having to defend that sometimes to other people, and then constantly running that question through in prayer. Is this all? Is it enough? And I think if it's not just in the area of church, are we doing enough? Is this right? But it's in the area of work and parenting and friendships and money and all those other areas. Yeah. Just looking at the people around me and how are they doing it? Like looking at my partners at work and how they're practicing, how many patients they're seeing, how many surgeries they're doing, how many meetings they're going to, how many committees they're involved in, and comparing that to what I'm doing. And there's that, there's a temptation to do that, but I feel like what God's trying to show me is do only what I'm calling you to do, like follow my rhythm. Let that be what paces you, not the others around you.
Yeah, I like that. You almost hit it. The phrase that Eugene Peterson uses, which we use a lot on the podcast, to learn the unforced rhythms of grace, that he translates Matthew 11, which is such a great passage. And I think the enough word is all the hand grenade the enemy needs to toss into our lives at moments. Because one, it gets us comparing ourselves to other things and people. And I think that's as destructive as it can be. The whole idea, and first or 2 Corinthians 10, where Paul talks about when they compare themselves with themselves, by themselves, they end up with no understanding. Mm-hmm. It is very difficult to stay on an adventure from Jesus if you're taking your cues from what are other people doing and am I doing enough to measure up to that, whether it's church or we talk about often the parenting becoming a competition sport. So am I doing enough often goes to, well, look at that parent and what they're doing and that parent. And almost always the enough thing, at least for me, in my earlier days of this journey, the enough thing was always I would look at my weaknesses and your strengths and then try and live up to your strengths with my weaknesses. Or I would look at what other people are doing and I've got to do more than that to kind of keep things cool. And I think a big one was when you get out of the hyperactivity of a religious institution, particularly a mega church like you were part of or mm-hmm. I was part of for a time, where you've got programs every night, there's tons of things, there's mission trips to go on, there's just things all the time. And all those things need people. So there's always this encouragement to get involved. And it's easy then when you fall away from that and you kind of spill into a more of a life of this unforced rhythm of grace. I think the enemy just loves to whisper in our head, yeah. But are you doing enough? And that goes to the religious thing of, are you reading the Bible enough? Are you praying enough? It goes to, are you parenting good enough? It goes to just every area of our life. And I would hope we'd see two things. This is what I hope for people. We see two things as places where God doesn't need us to be. One is comparing ourselves to others. And the other question is asking the enough question, particularly when it's not, boy, am I following God enough? And, you know, that would be a good question, not measured then by, well, I'd have 19 meetings a week and 17 committees. It wouldn't be that. It would just be, am I listening? Am I following? And I'm not even sure the enough word works there. I'm still trying to find a way to say it where it works. And I don't think it does. I think it's such a great word for the enemy mm-hmm. to get our head and heart in the wrong place and thinking about things that aren't going to be helpful. It takes us away from the adventure of a journey and what mm-hmm. God's opening next. Takes me out of that space of being relaxed and enjoying what he's done in my life too, creating these now new needs of addressing enough and trying to stay busy enough and even trying to be fruitful enough. If I went through the in-season book, I finally got copies of yesterday, so we can finally send those things out. But what I know people have asked me, gosh, it seems like you're in a time of harvest. You come out with Jesus Lens, in season, man like no other, all in mm-hmm. the last couple of months. And I know we've just overwhelmed people. I'm sorry about that.
And Sarah.
But people say you must be in a season of harvest. And the fact is, I'm not. Those things for me, all those things were done a significant time ago. But to bring them to fruition, I'm right now coming to a winter time where I know my life has gotten way too busy with way too many things. And a grapevine, what I know about grapevines is this, at the end of the year, a branch on a grapevine will have 30 canes coming off that branch, first year canes. Only two or three of those are going to produce fruit for the next year. And if you don't cut the other 25, 35 off, those two or three are not going to bear fruit. And I, through all my life spent through the last 5 to 7 years, I know God's inviting me right now into a space of I'm just trimming you back to where I really want you to bear fruit for the next season of your life. And so I really do feel like I'm in a winter time. I feel like, and I love winter. I think winter is where we learn the unforced rhythms of grace. We all learn to hate winter. It's, you know, it's cold and the vine, it's got to be miserable for them. They're freezing to death out there. But that sap, the activity slows down enough where the farmer gets to the heart of a vine. And I think winter, that season in a believer, and I'm not saying every believer's in winter because lo and behold, it's winter time out there. I've been in winter since August in terms of spiritually letting my life slow down, having opportunities to busy it up, and just going, you know what? Unless I know God has really called me to that, I'm not going to do it just because the opportunity is there because I have more opportunity now that I can deal with. So I keep backing up into the space of what's really fruitful for me going forward. Mm-hmm. I love that season. Mm-hmm. The word enough doesn't fit in that season. It doesn't. You can judge yourself. Other people can judge you in all kinds of ways, saying, gosh, you were more fruitful back there when you were doing more visible things. Instead of, no, I really think fruitfulness is hinged to my learning to follow.
Right.
And that question enough doesn't help me. I think it's Satan's hand grenade. I really do.
I agree. And I think I won't remember the quote, but I remember the concept and these two words kind of stuck in my head. But somewhere along the way, I've either read or heard Richard Foster talk about how the adversary uses busyness and muchness as two of his greatest weapons, that we feel like we have to stay so busy and we need to do and have so much, that those are two of his biggest tools to work against us. And that goes through my head. I think of it so often because it just really resonates with me as I feel like, a constant need to do. And I am a doer and a productive driven person. But I've also enjoy that space of when I'm doing a little less and it's more relaxed. And I'm thinking right now in terms of professionally, when I have those days where, oh, maybe some patients have canceled or a surgery has been rescheduled or something, and I have suddenly extra time,
some space
to sit with the people that I am with, and I just enjoy those and let them I just kind of sink into the opportunities and take each one slowly. It just feels so much it's just so much more rewarding when there's just that room, and I can so fill that space in with other things, but I'm finding that now I don't want to, because it's not about producing, it's not about the income, it's not about it's not about success or how others see me, it's really just about that person in front of me. Yeah. And that opportunity.
And being able to fully be in the moment.
Yeah.
I have the space in my life and margins in my
exactly,
life.
Exactly. To enjoy margin. I mean, now I just, I beg for margin. And when I get it, I'm so thankful. But I'm as guilty as anybody for the lack of it in my life, because, I so often will fill those spaces in with other things. And the days that I don't, and I leave a little bit of room, and there's the room to ride my bicycle to work because I haven't put something between, when I wake up at 6 and when my first patient's there at 8, if I haven't crammed something in there and I can just take a leisurely bike ride to work and sit and have a cup of coffee when I get there, those are some of the best days, because it sets the pace for the rest of the day of and just inviting God in and watching the day unfold and not feeling the need to plan it and control it myself, like cram in every single thing I can.
I know for me, busyness being something of the devil, like Richard Foster suggested, I think that's really true. It's one of his great tools. I also think, for me at least, it was a security blanket for my flesh. Whenever I felt insecure about my relationship with God, I would use busyness to say, well, I don't have any other choices because my life is so full. So actually, busyness was a place to hide for me.
Yeah.
And I love that God's invites me out of that. I don't see busyness that way anymore. There's something about my flesh now, and my life gets pushed to the margins. And some days it does. And I think any of our lives, there's going to be periods of time where just the crunch of stuff, I'm watching my wife go through it now, shipping books.
She's
and
busy.
Birthdays for daughter and granddaughters in this season. So Sarah's, even today, even you being here, she's been incredibly busy.
The
books came in incredibly late. They were supposed to have been here a week ago, and we didn't get them until yesterday. So Sarah's trying to get the in-season books out. But so there's not... Like my dad during harvest time, I mean, we worked morning to night getting the crop in. So it's not like those things are sinful, but I don't enjoy them like I used to. I used to enjoy them because they were my place to hide. Now I'm in them going, I'll be glad when this is over, because I don't have the insecurity in my life about my relationship with God anymore. I'm not feeling like, well, this busy validates me.
Mm-hmm.
And when you lose that, then busyness, it may be a place you have to live in for a moment. But it's not something you want to camp out in. It's not something where you hide your inner emptiness by making your life busy on the outside. And I do see a lot of people do that, even people who want a relationship with Jesus. They're so busy. They've got, and even busy with the entertainment, TV, football, whatever they're trying to keep up with. That adds to a busyness in their life that dulls that inner voice. The inner voice goes silent. And not, I wouldn't say it goes silent. I'd say we go deaf to that voice when our life gets really, really complicated and we get really, really busy. And so I also think it's a place where we hide.
Yeah.
And our flesh loves to hide there. Mine does. Then we're talking about compartmentalizing trust a little bit and how that sorts out in life.
Yeah.
You remember that?
I do.
What were you thinking there?
Well,
I wouldn't let her talk about this, because I was like, you know what? I think other people are going to want to talk about this with us. And so I said, let's go upstairs and do this. But
I think God's been showing me this probably most recently in parenting. And I think I realized that a lot of the ways that I've learned to trust God in terms of one part of my life, whether that be church family or spiritual side of my life or my financial side, I'm trusting Him in that. I haven't yet been able to implement that same degree of trust in each area. So suddenly I realize, as I have an adolescent son, he's 14, and I'm realizing he's, you know, typical 14-year-old boy, kind of pulling away from mom, more independent. And so I feel like, you know, there's this sense of like, there's things I need to teach him as a parent, and I need to help shape him and grow him. And I feel this sense of, necessity to interrupt the normal flow of day and time to teach and to model. And sometimes that's not spontaneous. That's just, it's me feeling, the pressure, the need to do that because I haven't yet trusted, him to God in the journey that he's on and feeling like I'm still responsible for his journey. And, you know, in the ways, and it is a big shift. I mean, you know, when you have a young kid, truly, you know, they're dependent on you for many, many things, and their dependence changes as they age. But I'm feeling that sense of, oh, am I going to get it all done? Is he going to be the man that I desire for him to be? Like, am I doing enough as a parent?
Yeah.
And, so that's an area where.
Is that how you notice places where you're not trusting, those kinds of questions?
Is it what, how I notice?
When you say, I'm not trusting him here like I'm trusting him in other areas, how do you know?
Well, because it feels, I know I'm not, because there's a tension that doesn't feel light. It feels like I'm carrying a load. It's that there's a sense of a burden there. And I'm like, why do I feel burdened suddenly by parenting him? I'm hitting a little bit of a panic, and I'm reaching out to read about parenting and talk to other parents and saying, does anybody want to come into my garage and pray about our children? I mean, I just feel like a kind of a desperate sense of like, I've got to do something here. And it's not because he's on a wayward path, because he's not, but you know.
For me, I always describe it as anxiety or anxiousness. That's how I know I'm not trusting. And I love the fact that in some areas of my life right now, man, I never have anxiety. I just total trust in God's ability, and he's won that over lots of seasons. Then I get into other situations, and I know tension, same word, tension, anxiety, whatever. I feel it rise in me, and I'm going, oh, God, I don't trust you here.
Right.
And I want to. So, and I really think one of the expressions I like about trust is God wins us to trust, just like a relationship between a husband and wife or a growing relationship between friends. Trust is something that gets won. It's not a matter of, well, I'm going to take the same principles I learned about house church and apply it to parenting. Would that we were that bright or we're wired in that way. At least I'm not. I'll say that. What I can say to God is, Lord, I trust you here. Obviously, I'm not doing so here.
Yeah.
So what is it about you I don't know? And what is it that you want to teach me about you? And I think that's how God wants to win. If he's the author and finisher of our trust, he wants to win us into that growing space.
Right.
And so I think it's wonderful for us to say, here I do. Here, not so much. Mm-hmm. Here, not at all. And it opens that adventure of saying, okay, God, how are you going to teach me to trust you where I don't?
Right. I think he does. He proves himself faithful. And oftentimes we can move that over. He's proved himself faithful in one area. So then we can conclude he will also be, you know, his essence is not changing. So he will also be faithful in areas of dating and marriage, and he'll be faithful in areas of parenting and family. But we just haven't yet sunk into that yet. I mean, it's not yet become our reality. We're not operating as if we know him to be faithful and trustworthy.
Or if we know him to be faithful, perhaps the other concern is, but I'm not sure his faithfulness is going to get the result I want.
Yeah, or we think, okay, he's going to be faithful, but what's my role in that? Like, I still have to, like, what does he want me to do? Like,
I can only trust him when I've done everything right. That's no place to live either.
Yeah.
In the long run. Because I think it does. I think the enemy wants to put all the focus back on us. I like keeping it on him. But I also realize, gosh, there are times when I'm not going to see what I need to see. And I want to be one into that space. And if I'm not one into it, then I'm going to have these anxieties and tensions that make a mess of my life.
Yeah.
And I don't want to live there anymore. But I do think it's neat to know, yeah, I can look at my life and say, yeah, these areas, trust is growing well. These areas, it's not so much. And he gets to invite us into that space. And I think for me, it's when I'm free from the outcome. I can trust God with my kids, but what if my kids end up being a prodigal? Right. I'm not sure I can trust them there. Or I can trust them in my practice now because my practice is together now. What if I've got 1/10 the billables the other doctors do and they're trying to pressure me out of the partnership, whatever? Then it might invite a very different conversation with God in that kind of environment. The church thing, watching how God's shaped Jib, and now you're feeling so at peace with the result. I know for me, I know trusting God's faithfulness is not necessarily going to get my agenda. It's not going to get one what I hope gets one.
Yeah.
But the greater piece is knowing, yeah, he's great. But I guess we don't know. I think it's better caught than taught, to use the old expression. Because people really, I know I get this all the time. When, what book can I read to fix this for parenting? What book can I read to? We're always looking for a principle to apply instead of, you know, this is an adventure God wants to crawl into. And I know that's not a very satisfying answer for people who
want. And to be honest, some of the best books that I've read are really not so much about principles. Sometimes it's just reading about somebody else's journey and how they've invited God into that process or talking to somebody else about it. It's not really about the principle, but sometimes it just helps to hear stories of other people in that same kind of place, trying to sort through that. And the reality of what kind of keeps us stuck, certain things that we haven't yet let go of or died to, certain, certain idols in our life of, you know, control and respect and appreciation, and certain things that we haven't yet been crushed fully in us. I think some of it's that. I think you're right about letting go of the outcome. I think I had a conversation with a friend one time and was talking about a messy situation I was in and I was worried about the outcome, and he kept asking me the question, what if? So what if that happened, then what? And then I would answer, and then he would say, well, what if that happened, then what? And we'd be down this trail for, I don't know, 7 or 8 what ifs, and when we got to the end, it still wasn't bad. I mean, when we got to the end, the reality of that was, I was still good, and it wasn't the disaster. It always came back around to it just kind of put it in perspective of realizing that the problem I saw in front of me looked really, really big. But when I walked that out, even if it went the wrong direction, it all came back. I was still okay, yeah. You know, and I just had to. I had to play that out in my head to realize that I had made this thing be something really, really big, and it just wasn't that big.
And that's how God wins us to that space. Even if I'm not doing all I'm supposed to be doing, even if I don't get the result I want to get, He is still going to be faithful to me.
Right.
And that's where the confidence comes. It sets people at rest.
Even if he's still good and I'm still fine, and, you know, but...
So have you forgiven me yet for dragging you up here out of the conversation to put you on the microphone?
I'm beginning to. This microphone thing is a little intimidating, but the conversation's good.
You wear it well. Well, we're past time, so we're going to have to wind up. Thanks for coming and sharing your conversation with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me again.
Hopefully we'll get Brad in here next time around. His life's pretty busy these days, so yeah. So thanks for pitch hitting for him. I think he'll appreciate it.
Okay, you're welcome, Brad.
All righty.
Bye-bye.
On the God Journey, you can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com.